Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at the blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com, or you are in the most efficient way. You're at the iTunes search engine. On iTunes, all you have to do is enter Warman Kickfighting Show or enter Lord Gaul, which was my username when I first fell in love with the sport. Also, for the Twitter followers, twitter.com/StephenTheWarman. Going to go ahead and get into some of the glory stuff. I won't be able to do all the cards that happened this past weekend because, like I said, I was super busy. I got some guys who I got fought in the UFC this past weekend. We came up short. And I also had some friends who come and train with me here and there who are at the UFC tryouts today. So I just had a busy day and I wasn't able to sit down and watch all the fights. But I'll do my best to go through it, give you a short show, but I definitely want to touch on some of the major issues that are happening. First of all, Glory makes its return to Amsterdam. I went to a big spiel about it last week, but it just needs to be noted that it's cool to see kickboxing with a good kickboxing audience watching it. We had a good solid crowd for this event, and that's what's going to happen the more they focus on the European market. Basically, you've got to treat this like you treat soccer, football. You know what I'm saying? You got to look at it in terms of no matter what happens to the rest of the world, it might get bigger in certain parts, but it's still not going to be better in certain parts. So clearly, I know that they're looking at the UFC brand, the MMA brand, and that was the model that they were trying to accomplish for a while. But with that said, they are putting athletes on their card that weren't necessarily reflections of the best fighters in the world. Whereas if you look at what happens with, Premier League and so on, those guys are always going to represent the premier, footballers in the world. So if you get an American brand of it, there's an understanding that even if there's success, the brand isn't as high a level as you're going to see in the European markets. So, or Brazil, for example. So like, I look at that and I look at that breakdown and I step away and I just kind of focus on, all right, what am I seeing, top to bottom for how kickboxing can have success with it? They got to focus on Europe the majority of the time. They can maybe have their Super Bowl event, something really big happen in Japan once a year at least. And then, of course, they can visit the States once or twice. Back in, the big K1 heyday, they came to the States twice. They had an event in August and an event around April, something like that. But the majority of their shows were based in Japan, where they had already developed the market because it's a TV product for the Japanese market. And then, of course, they stayed in Europe a lot, where a lot of their stars were from. Them returning to Amsterdam and doing a card and seeing a full house, Ariel Helwani, who's, MMA reporter who follows kickboxing here and there, he said, man, why don't they, always do cards in front of a European audience? Why do, and, a full audience as opposed to a, pretty much next to nothing, casino in America, And clearly, because of the time zone, and because it was on Spike, that was the goal. Plus, Spike wanted American fighters. Spike stepped in and literally made fights happen because they wanted Americans in some of the tournaments. Raymond Daniels, for example, being put in the Glory four-man tournament in Japan because they wanted American on the card. Like, he wasn't at the time. He's improved since then. At the time, he was not a reflection of the best fighters in the world. He had one win for the Glory brand. So, like, you look at that decision, and then some other decisions work out in their favor. Joe Schilling definitely turned himself into a star, but Joe Schilling had a good resume before he went down that road. They were trying to force other guys, and it didn't always happen. They had some good performances, it didn't always happen. They did a much better job of, now focusing on this European market. Their last show in Italy had a good crowd. This show's got a good crowd. The focus has got to be these areas that are already returned to Russia. That'd be fun. They got to focus on these areas. That's huge. It's so vital. So I step back and I look what's going on in the kickboxing world, what's going on in the fight world, and I really see that the most success can be had on a consistent basis if you look at the Glory brand, put it in Europe. For if you do 10 shows in a year, 7 of them got to be in Europe. 6-7. So I'm excited that this card went off. I'm excited that there was a big crowd there. I'm excited that, the mayor that gave so much trouble over the years was in attendance. Some things have got to be asked before I get into the fights. I brought this question up. Does race play a card? And I'll definitely take you know, tweets or, you know, messages about this if you're curious, if you have insight on it. But I asked myself, does race play a card? When I did the documentary, and I one of the – I can't name the guy's name because I didn't want people to come after him, whatever. But when I did the interview with Badr Hari, after I was done with Badr Hari and I was done at Mike's Gym, I was on my way back to, you know, the Amsterdam area. They kind of gave me a ride from downtown Amsterdam, and I was going back to the train so I can head back to Utrecht because that's where my friend was staying. So I'm riding with them in the car, and one of the guys says, you know, we're talking about Amsterdam and the perception of kickboxing and so on. One of the guys says in the car, the problem with the country is all the Moroccans. The Moroccans make up 90% of the crime, and a lot of Moroccans like kickboxing. And that, I mean, the guy didn't even think about it when he said it. But the first thing I thought was, what a racist thing to say. Like, that just, it just came off as racist to me. But the culture of what this guy was probably going through is probably something that he maybe had been fed on TV. 90% of the crime in Holland is done by the Moroccans. That's a pretty huge number. Now, again, it could be the way it is in America where you could have these big numbers of crimes, but it's where you look for the criminals. So, for example, in America, when I was in college, I had a friend who talked about how when he would be drinking and driving in his small town, if the cops saw him, they'd pull him over and then they'd give him a ride home. That ain't happening if you're in the city. You know, the cop doesn't know who your family is. They're not going to just pull you over and take you in. So that's going to skew what the number looks like. Could it be that some of these people are, you know, some of the cops, and again, I'm just kind of, you know, talking out loud here. Some of the cops that kind of create this atmosphere of, okay, there's kickboxing, there's a fight event, there are bad people there, they're Moroccan, let's start, you know, looking to be arresting in this area, or let's go ahead and assume that all these people are bad. Maybe some of these things are happening culturally. So I started to ask myself, is one of the reasons why Glory, and part of it, of course, being it's an international brand, but the other part of me wondered, is there a chance that they could have made the decision of being okay with kickboxing coming back to Amsterdam because the stars are white Dutch? And I'm not necessarily saying that's the case. And Nicky Holtzkin did an awesome job in his interview. And this is to an American audience. I mean, he's speaking to some people who had no idea what he was asking or what he was explaining. They don't know the situation of Amsterdam and kickboxing, but he said, it's important to me that people realize that we are sporters, our sportsmen, and we aren't just bad people. Bad people are just some of the people who come and watch this. The majority of us have children and houses and wives, and we have lives outside of it, and this is just our job, and we love our job. When Nicky Holtzkin did that, I literally like stood up and said, that's my guy. You know what I'm saying? That, in that small interview before he went out there, he pretty much summed up what he was trying to accomplish there. Now, is it easier for us, you know, for that community to hear that from a Nicky Holtzkin, you know, or Rico Verheeven, because, you know, they're white Dutch? Is it easier for an audience who's watching TV to look at those guys and be like, all right, now I'll give this a try, or now I'll go back out? Even the crowd, I thought there was a decent amount of white Dutch there, as opposed to some of the Showtime events had a whole lot of Moroccan communities. But I still thought the crowd was the normal interracial Dutch, all in all, and I thought it was interesting that the mayor was there, and I thought that that was a turnaround, and I'm glad that it all happened. But I just want to throw that question out to some of my listeners. Do you think that that comes into play? Because we talked about it for a little bit. Evan Boris, shout out to Evan Boris. I saw him out when we were both on the – we both had fighters on the same card. And I was messing with Evan Boris about it because I told him one of the things that I use for techniques is I say – don't punch the guy. Punch the guy standing behind him. And then Evan in the corner said that. And then they repeated it on the broadcast for the fight pass. And I was like, oh, Evan, damn you, that you stole my line. So I was just having fun with him. But me and him talked about this. Me, him, Molawal, we were talking about this. Molawal had spent some time out in Holland. He talked about how there are some bad dudes around there, and there's also some great people around there. But we talked about the culture of it a little bit. And we wondered if that question, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and send it out to anybody. Feel free to tweet me about it. But do you think that the fact that Verheeven and Holtzkin being champions has anything to do with the reason why the city was more accepting in kickboxing for this event? Now let's go ahead and get out of the politics of life and get into the action kickboxing at its highest. Two of the best at it. Nicky Holtzkin gets a debated decision over Mirtho Grünhardt by split decision. For the welterweight title, first and foremost, I'll make this clear. I thought Mirza Grunhart won. I was fine with his activity. I was fine with his clean scorings, his combinations, his speed over the power. I saw there was a lot of outrage, of course, when this decision was read. One of the cards was 49-46 in favor of Nicky Holtzkin. I'm very much against that one. But for the most part, I'm going to step back and I'm just going to give you guys another view of this. It's something that I've been trying to challenge myself to do lately. The reason why I've been doing it is I think it's just too easy to kind of ride that, you know, in boxing, there's like a community of, I love boxing, but sometimes there's a community of complaint that kind of goes on there. And I don't want to be a part of that. Sometimes I just want to remove myself, look at the round and say, hey, I'm going to watch this fight a couple times. The way I saw it was Mirza Grunhart won the fight. But now let me see if I can sit down and see if there's an argument for the other athlete. Sit down and make it. First thing that I want to point out, everybody should rewatch round one. Round one has the most amount of, it's close enough to go to either guy. Like that one is a swing round. A lot of people went Mirza there. Nicky Holtzkin did some good work with low kicks and stuff early. Some combination stuff. Definitely a swing round in round one. So for those who are really, you know, adamant that Mirza Grunhart won, and again, I thought Mirza won, definitely revisit round one. You might have a different perspective on it, on another look. Next thing I want to bring up is round five was also another one of those rounds where I felt Nicky Holtzkin had taken it, but the way he'd taken it, Mirza had still got some good offense going, and a lot of people I saw on their cards, they gave that round to Mirza, whereas it was clear to me, in particular, the way Nicky Holtzkin began the round destroying that inside leg kick. I definitely think that he was scoring the more significant power shots, and when he hit Mirza, it looked like Mirza was hit. Like it looked like it affected him. But Mirza was able to bite down and be a consistent scorer. I really like Mirtha's work in rounds 2, 3, 4 for me. If you ask me why I gave him the fight, those are the rounds that I say, you know what? Nicky definitely made some, one and three of my swing rounds or my closer rounds. I thought that Nicky had some moments for a little bit in round four, but I really thought that Mirza Grunhart for the last 2 minutes of the round did most of the scoring. So I like Mirza in round four. I like Nicky Holtzkin in round three, and I like Mirza in round two. What I had it was, I had 1-2 and 4 for Mirza, and I had 3 and 5 for Holtzkin, if I'm remembering correctly. But the swing round for me is round one very much could have been a Holtzkin round. It was close enough. Like, just rewatch it. Hear me out. Rewatch that round. I didn't feel confident. When I heard the 49-46, I'm assuming that somebody gave the rounds that I gave, Nicky, and 5 and 3, and they gave 1, and somehow they gave him 2 or 4, and I didn't see it that way. With my own eyes, I didn't see. I can't see 4 rounds for Nicky Holtzkin. I can see 2, and then I could see maybe a third, but I couldn't see a fourth. So that's why I really disagreed with that last card of 49-46. I can make an argument for Mirza Grunhart getting 4 of the rounds, though. Some people even wanted to give him round 5, but round 3 was the only round that I was like, you know what? Nicky Holtzkin scored well, and he landed some shots that really, to the body, that really affected Mirza. Other than that, rounds 1, 2, 4, and 5, I can make an argument for Mirza Grunhart winning those rounds, even though I gave Holtzkin 5, as I mentioned before. I thought that his power shots were really significant. It is unfortunate when the cards are read like that. The crowd wasn't in this dismay as much, but as you can see, and this has been happening a lot lately, people are starting to see what happens in the losing corner a lot more. You saw it with the MMA event this past weekend where there's video footage of Aldo in the back, you know, kind of crying, and he's like really brokenhearted and disappointed because, you know, he got stopped in the fight. And then you look at Mirza Grunhart's corner after it, and Mirtha's just trying to put the words together to kind of say something rational because you think that you've pulled off this great upset. But Mike's staying there, and Yuri Mess really just looks just destroyed, like just really heartbroken by this. Don't forget, when we're making all these predictions and we're picking rounds and so on, and a guy wins, sometimes the most outcry that people can say is someone was robbed and a decision didn't go their way, and I thought Mirza Grunhart won this fight. But you just don't realize how bad it is until you look at that person's corner, you follow that person afterwards. It's just not enough to say, man, I won. Man, I should have got that decision. A lot of these guys are really, really heartbroken. And Mirko Gruenhart should be the glory champion in my eyes. But I can still see a little bit of swing round in one for them to see that decision go in the other way. But I thought that Mirko Gruenhart should be the champion. Featherweight tournament was absolute destruction by Mossab Amrani. Mossab Amrani played with a southpaw stance really good. He ripped his hooks really good. But the thing that he got going, and it's something that you should also pay attention to when Sidichai stopped the beat carrier earlier this year, it's how you play with your body work. And Mossab usually started off by scoring a big knee to the body early, playing with his power shots upstairs, and then returning to the body with a big knee or a big shot. Both downs, I think, were identical from remembering the same. I think he started off combinations, staying in the pocket when he was playing with Chai Bin Lim. He's in there, he's throwing strong offense. Then all of a sudden, I could see a big body rip downstairs. I see a knee downstairs. Then I see a body rip return. And then he goes back down there with the knee. The knee scores the down. Chai Bin Lim's in trouble. Lim gets up. He's trying to fight back. Amrani goes back to the offense. Hook upstairs, hook to the body, and that's the fight. Absolutely beautiful by Mossab Amrani, who, like I said before, 3 weeks ago, this guy's coming off of being rocked and a cut loss in China. Comes out there, gets that stoppage. And another fight. Michael York fights Shane Oblonsky, who is just all over the place. He was emotional. His sister died in an unfortunate situation very early in her life. And he comes out there, and I know his goal is to perform well. But he was a mess, whereas Yerk was, like, in control, throwing clean combinations, got Shane in trouble, dropped him at the end of the first, and then dropped him twice in the second round, and that was it. It really is unfortunate that whenever you've got those motivations and you want to go out there and perform a certain way and it doesn't happen, it's definitely heartbreaking. And he kept getting up and he was game to go, but the two knockdown rule in tournaments is there for a reason. And York was able to get this decision with the power combinations that he put together, and he was able to land big shots and he got the win over Shane Oblonsky. Then he runs into Mossab Amrani, who literally fought the exact same way. Came out in a softball stance, got a big body kick score early, played with hooks upstairs. Like, he came out throwing heat. Mossab Amrani wasn't playing. And then a knee scores to the body. You can see the damage. Returns down there with hands, another big knee, like a knee kick kind of in the middle. And then York went down, and York stayed down. Like people were wondering, is he going to, you know, get back up to his feet? Is it going to happen? But the shot that landed, it was like a, you know, mid-kick knee sort of thing. But he had already been hurt to the body. And when that scored and he went down, I was like, man, this is the Mossab Amrani that everybody thought was going to be the champion. This is the guy who, special guy, the fight with him and Adamczyk is going to be awesome if he can get that same offensive effectiveness going. Because as slick as Adamczyk is, he gives up too much offense. He doesn't score enough. So if you've got the volume, even if he's playing slick, you might sway the judges just because of his hands. So we'll see. It's definitely a tough situation, and you can understand how this guy is very talented and how skilled he is and what he's capable of doing. But Mossab, this was in front of this crowd. Sometimes it's just where you fight. Mossab Amrani's put on some of the best performances of his life in Amsterdam. You know, and even in defeat to, you know, the Moody Kamal, he still put on an awesome performance, and some people thought he won the fight. He is at home in front of that audience. He's super famous. People, it's to see him walk around the streets in Amsterdam. Everybody calls him. Everybody knows who he is. This guy brings it. He's an awesome fighter, and I was very happy that he was able to get the victory here. Next thing I want to talk about is Rico Verheerven putting on the performance of his life against Benjamin Adebuyi. This was one-sided from the beginning. Rico Verheerven couldn't miss a right hand. He was able to score them straight. He was able to step off to the side, score them with angles. He was able to score combinations and low kicks. He was able to score one-shots and throw quick high kicks that were barely blocked by Benjamin, just staying alive. This was an absolute technical clinic. And when he puts the combination together, he scores the right hand straight, closes the gap. The next right hand, he loops it just a little bit, still comes in clean, bang, on the button, fight over with. Rico Verhaeven runs over Benjamin Adebowi after Benjamin had the big start in the last fight, and it shows about understanding game plans. Rico Verhaeven said he wanted to start faster this time because he thought that because Benjamin had the hot start last time in round one, Benjamin would come out a little bit more paced, looking to be more prepared for round five, which he said he wasn't. The first time around, he just started scoring a lot, so he was like, I'm going to build on this offense. I'm going to try to score the shot to get Rico out of here, and then Rico didn't go anywhere, so then Rico won rounds two through five. Rico understood that Benjamin was going to come out that way, and Rico clearly understood that when he goes out to have, you know, to compete with this guy, when he goes out there, if he starts fast, Rico believed in his ability to fight five rounds, so starting fast was only to his benefit. But the start was, it's kickboxing at its highest. If there's one thing that I credit this generation of heavyweight kickboxing for, they don't have the KOs of the old guys. Verhaeven, of course, putting one together here. But they are more technically smooth than the guys that were stars in the 90s. Most people don't want to hear that because they're old kickboxing heads and they like that generation. There are some people that were super technical, you know, but overall, look at some of those KOs. There were some times where, you know, Jerome LeBanner and Mike Bernardo were just throwing, you know, ghetto blasters, and those were where we're getting them KOs, you know. They didn't necessarily have to be technical all the time. And even the technical guys like Ernesto Hoost and Andy Hoog, who stayed technical for the majority of the time, sometimes they've got some wild hook, you know, KOs when they're just trying to blast people out of there. They've got some of those in there. So don't think that generation, because they're your, you know, they're kind of edged in your history, that those guys weren't sloppy. And I'm only including the stars, you know. The fight with, Peter Arts, the one where he pushes the guy and he gets the head kick. I can't think of the guy's name. He's a Dutch fighter too. But he pushes him right on the ropes and he kind of gives space and he scores the head kick and the guy kind of reaches up and grabs his own jaw before he falls down. That fight, go watch that fight. It is one of the ugliest kickboxing fights you're ever going to see. Those guys were technical in spots, but they're also wild in other spots. Rico Verhaeven's never wild in other spots. Rico Verhaeven is a skilled, clean kickboxer. Benjamin Adebowi is a clean kickboxer. Daniel Guida, these guys are big, but they're clean and technical. Maybe because their era came right after Remy Bonjowski, who wasn't a wide kind of shot type of guy. He was a clean combination guy, even though his hands weren't there early in his career. He started to score more downs later in his career. But Rico Verhaeven could be a beneficiary of following that era, and his technique could just be that much cleaner, you know, focusing on both guys. Sparred with Tyson Fury, for example, he brought that up. Rico just had the performance of his career, and he seems like, you know, in this, all this guy's gonna be the next guy. This is gonna be the next guy. Rico Verhaeven is the guy now. He is the guy. Dave Walsh wrote it really well on Liverkick.com, saying, you know, the prince is now the king. Like, he's the man. He's the man to beat. Clearly, there are some fun matchups I'd like to see if we can get Badahari's act together. I still want to see Badahari fight him. I think that Rico is going to, you know, Daniel Guida returning. I want to see that. You know, I want to see these fights, but time will tell. All I know is that Rico Verhaeven right now had a great year. If he hadn't lost that fight in China earlier this year against Krizenchuk, might be butchering his name. I can't remember. Krizenchuk? I can't remember exactly. But I remember the fight was in January, and then he fought, defended the title against Errol Zimmerman right after. And I go back to that date, and I go, man, if he didn't force himself into that fight that he needed to have for money, because China's courses are paying good money, he probably would have been my fight of the year. But, man, he really turned it on, got meaner, got better all the time. Congratulations to Rico Verhaeven. We go to the Super Fight Series, where a fight that I most definitely picked wrong, Thomas Veniste gets a split decision victory over Errol Zimmerman. This is about Errol Zimmerman. Veniste, it was brought in to get stopped by Errol Zimmerman. Like, he's got big, thick shoulders. He moves really slow. He doesn't have the best defense. He can throw consistent offense at points. Not even consistent kickboxing, but he'll be throwing something out there offensive for Veniste. Errol Zimmerman just, I mean, maybe it's the layoff, but maybe it's the fact that he probably thought that he was going to score something that was going to score a KO or whatever. But It's the kind of loss that I wouldn't have fathomed. I just would not have thought that he would have lost it. I thought this fight was pretty much, you know, a setup for Zimmerman to win. Maybe the rust coming off the injury. We'll see what happens moving forward with him, because Zimmerman's had losses like this and bounced back. But I got to admit, I am surprised. Don't want to take anything away against Thomas Vaneste, who got a big-time win. You know, clearly, maybe he can get himself into one of those four-man tournaments. You know, good for him getting this W, standing up, being a professional, going in there, competing, and getting his hands raised. But, man, this fight is so much to me about Errol Zimmerman, who just, it's just not one that I would have thought that he would have lost. Next fight I want to talk about is Murad Buzidi getting a decision over Daniel Younga. I thought Daniel Younga won the fight, but I'm fine with Murad Buzidi winning the fight. This was in a, you know, end of the world type of decision. I thought Daniel Younga and that combination to low kick flow, his offensive consistency, the fact he's walking down. Murad Buzidi was able to score in spots. He always is. He's always able to score because Daniel Younga, his defense sometimes is just taking it and throwing offense back. So he is hittable. But I did think that Daniel Younga was going to win this one, and I did think he did win. But he wasn't able to get the nod in Holland. It's unfortunate for him. He's coming off two very close fights, two split decision losses. You know, Murad Buzidi, a guy who he beat before. You know, Murad's happy that he got the upset here. And Daniel Younga is in a real weird spot. Like, he's ready to fight, down to fight whoever. He's good enough to get wins here. They're just eluding him. And the Artem fight, just eluding him. So hopefully he sticks with it. Hopefully he stays busy in Germany and he keeps coming back to kickboxing. Because I truly believe that the right year, right tournament format, Daniel Younga could be the best in the world at, you know, light heavyweight. But it just hasn't gone his way. And Murad Buzidi is a consistent kickboxer. At his best at the 209 weight class, the light heavyweight weight class. Definitely want to see more from him. Good chance that he ends up going against the winner of, you know, Gökhan Saki and Saul Califari. So we shall see, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. Zinedine Hamar Lane wins over Fred Sicking. A fight, like I said, these guys kind of sit in that middle ground of they never beat the elite guys, and this is kind of a matchup of guys who are brought in to lose to other people. It's so strange that this fight made the card, but I am still glad that it's an opportunity for two guys who, you know, it's almost like they deserve it because they're like really solid gatekeepers, you know. But at the same time, I did think that Fred Sicking was going to have a little bit of advantage, especially being at home, but he wasn't able to offer enough consistent offense to beat Zinedine. We'll see what's coming from the Frenchman Zinedine here in Lane. They'll use him more down the road, but I don't think he or Fred Sicking are elite for the weight class. I think that they're solid fighters, but they're always going to struggle with the top. Yoan Kangulo gets a victory over Karapetyan. Karapetyan has now returned to that role that he used to be in. He had a couple, you know, the couple of good wins like I talked about before. I'm still surprised at this very moment in time that he got that victory over, and another guy who's actually having an all right year, but he got that victory over Artur Shinko because Artur didn't get going until the third round. But Karapetyan's always been game, but Yoan Kangulo starts so well so early that I thought this one would be pretty easy, unanimous decision in his favor. He was able to outwork and score the more consistent kickboxing. Karapetyan still has his moments, but I just think Yoan Kangulo better at the weight class, and he will be better, you know, in a good matchup for people down the road. Last fight, I'm going to talk about, not really heartbroken because I'm glad he got his opportunity. Pervez Abduyalov gets a victory over Aziz Kala. I'm glad Aziz Kala got to the glory stage. I'm glad that he was able to compete. You know, Abduyalov is a guy who I think is talented. He's going to land consistent offense. I think that, you know, he's going to play with things like the Russian style of playing with combination and kicks, but they still got their flash. They got their Supermans, they got their spinning back kicks, they got their axe kicks. He's a guy who I think you're going to, you know, you can watch out for. If they do a show in Moscow, I think he's a good guy to bring in. I just want to see more of him. He's a good fighter. This was his kind of first big stage fight too, despite the fact that he's had some good solid wins outside of the promotion. But they were solid. They were nothing like what you're going to see in the glory level. So I like to see him fight more. You know, there are a lot of good guys. Jonsi would be a really good fight for him. So we'll see him moving forward. couple other things I want to talk about for before I leave this card. First of all, the return of Gokhan Saki. I'm glad they worked that out because Gokhan Saki is one of the best kickboxers in the world. He's one of the most recognizable names, and he needs to be fighting for the biggest kickboxing organization there is. It looks like those promotions that were offering him money in Dubai and so on, it looks like they weren't able to put together cards, and people were just kind of throwing away money, and they don't have a huge kickboxing audience in Dubai. In Dubai, they've got rich guys that kind of do stuff for fun here and there, and if they wanted to drive around in their Ferraris as opposed to going to the kickboxing event that day, they're going to do it, you know? So it's, he had a community of people around him who had money, who were willing to pay him a certain amount, but they were not going to give him the consistent opportunities to be what he is, one of the biggest stars in the sport. And this was kind of a lost year for Gokhan Saki. You know, like this whole past year, one of the best kickboxers on the planet didn't get his due at all. Whereas the year before that, you know, he wins that tournament and he's, you know, showing up to, you know, soccer games and stuff with the belt, and people are like, hey, recognizing him as a big kickboxing champion. And he started to get some people around him, like, yo, you should get paid this to fight here, and this is about a hard he's getting, and that kind of stuff, whatever. And then maybe people are getting in his ear. He decides that, you know what, Amsterdam, or Glory's so focused on being an American product that they're not hitting up places like Amsterdam and Europe hitting up the bigger cities in Europe, I should say. They're not going to kickboxing where kickboxing is big. And I'm thinking about leaving. And he tried to play against him. He thought that they had the money, and they don't have the money. Glory has to move their business model and pay guys in a certain way. And as soon as they make more money, they'll give more money. But them working it out financially means a lot. It means that they sat down and said, hey, this is to the benefit of our brand, and this is to this will really, really help us moving forward. So I'm glad that it worked out. I'm glad that the man has returned to high-level kickboxing, because Gokhan Saki is a star in the sport, and you really, really got to watch him. The last thing I want to talk about for the card, and it has to be said, is the reffing. All right, and this can be made really simple. Stefano Valenti has got to go. Like, he's just, here's the biggest thing that we want with refs. And it's weird because the other ref is great. John Axwood should do every single fight. I don't know what they need to do to pay John Axwood to do every fight, but he should do every fight. But this is the biggest thing that you look for as a kickboxing fan. Number one, we want you to not be a part of the fight, okay? Like, I understand that you've got to do rules, you've got to do counts, you've got to do stuff like that, whatever. But we don't want a ref's anything to have anything to do with the fight, period. Period, exclamation point. The less we hear from you, the better. And I was just thinking about it the other day when I was watching the fight with Cotto Canelo, Cotto Canelo, just a couple of weeks ago. That ref, there's pretty much like four holes in it. I don't think that ref had to do anything. He just watched a huge prize fight and pretty much did nothing. Didn't touch anybody, didn't really have to do any breakups. He just let the action dictate it. And then I remember they got to about round 9, and then like the commentating team was like, you know, the ref hasn't done anything all fight. You know, he's not a part of the action. We don't want the ref to ever be a part of it. So if you think that talking, and because some refs feel like they've got to say something all the time or at some period of time to show that they are part of the event, that they're part of the action, that they need to say something to say that I'm a part of the fight too. We don't want that. We don't want to hear anything from you. That's the number one thing that everybody wants from refs. We don't want you to be part of the fight. The number two thing that we want from a ref is if it doesn't affect the flow of the fight, don't say anything. Now, what I mean by that is this. If some sort of violation happens but the guys fight through it, don't stop us and remind us of the violation. You know, it's just do it if it's an egregious violation. You know, you just say it and they can just keep working. There's no reason to stop it. Go over to a guy and say anything, okay? So if you feel like a guy got hit behind the head, if the other guy keeps going, fight on. You know, we don't need you to step in and say anything. The other thing that we want, the last thing, of course, is just to do the rules to the letter of the law that you say you're going to do them. You know, like that, if you say, hey, you know, this is a violation, I'm going to warn you. This is, you know, if this happens, I'm going to do a 10 count, whatever. You've got to do that. Somehow, Stefano Valenti is guilty of every wrong thing that there is. First and foremost, let's just look at a couple examples. Number one, if you look at the Yerk 10 count that he received when he was going against Mousab Amrani. Clearly in bad shape. Yerk is down on the ground. He's waiting. As soon as he hears the 8, he's looking up. He hears 9. He stands up. And as soon as he stands up at 9, Valencia says 10. The distance between a second that he was doing for 1 through 9 and the distance between 9 and 10 were not the same. You can't just make that decision, oh, it's going to be quicker now, or oh, I'm calling the fight now. Get out of our fight. We don't want you in the fight making that decision. If the guy stands up and he's good to go under 10, you let him fight. If you feel he can fight, let him fight. Do not make the decision that if this guy gets up at 9, I'm just going to say 10, because that's what we feel like we're seeing. That's what we feel like we're witnessing. Also, somebody does some sort of crime, something like that, whatever. If you feel like you've got to say something to the person, I'm fine. But if it happens and the flow doesn't stop, you know, just go ahead and comment from the side and just, you know, let it go. Valencia seems determined to use his microphone every single fight. We feel like we've got to hear something from him all the time. The two worst guys are him and then the thicker, bald Japanese ref whose name I can't think of right now. Those guys are the worst. They are the 1 and 2 on the planet in kickboxing. Something about doing their job means that they've got to stop fights and they've got to point and warn people and they've got to be a part of the fight. You look at all the other judges around, refs around them, they're the refs, they're just chilling. They don't do nothing. You know, like they're just hanging out. They I'm in here to watch a prize fight and do a 10 count if somebody goes down. That's all we want. That is all we want. Because that's protecting the fighter and that's, and you know, upholding the rules. If there's a low blow or something like that, whatever, you got to come into play. I understand. But Stefano just seems to consistently feel like he's got to be a part of everything. It's just absolutely brutal. The polar opposite is John Axwood. John Axwood, not only, if something happens, John Axwood is fast about it. That's the other thing. We also want you to be fast. That's a bonus. If a mistake happens, he'd be like, penalty, or don't do this. And he steps away. Super quick. Barely hear him on the mic. I don't need him to stand between the guys. I don't need a meeting in the beginning. I need this to be called on the spot right away. That's not what I'm getting. That's not what I'm getting from Stefano. I'm getting it from John Axwood. John Axwood should do every single fight. John Axwood should just be getting paid. Whatever Stefano gets paid, strip that from him. Give it to John Axwood. Now, I'm hearing that they're kind of hiding behind SIKA is the one that's assigning the judges. Excuse me, I can't remember what sanctioning body. I'm thinking that it's ISKA. I'm pretty sure that's who it is. But they are assigning the judges and the refs, and we just got to live with it. No, you don't. You don't have to live with it. You're the brand. You can put whoever you want in that spot. You can put trained professionals that you hired specifically for that spot. That's all we want here in the States. That's all we want here in Europe. That's all we want all over the world. We want the people who are in there to know what they're doing and to be fast when they do it. We don't want refs to be a part of fights ever. Going to go ahead and leave that card and that note. We're going to go to some more bad reffing and bad just everything in general. Super Combat. First of all, let's talk about the good of Super Combat, who had an event this past week. They were in Turin. And go ahead and talk about some positive notables. Amancio Perichev is a guy from Romania who is doing well. He gets another KO over Alkid Faruka of Morocco. First round KO. Amancio is legit. I want to see this guy fight some more people. He's a very, very talented kid. Good stuff by him. Another fight in the card I'm going to talk about. Bogdan Stoica getting a victory over Damian Garcia. Damian Garcia was in that fought K1 when K1 would go out to Spain a couple times. He's a decent, solid name. Good win for Bogdan Stoica to get a KO over him in the second round. Good stuff, Mr. Stoica. Next thing I'm going to talk about is Raul Cadenas getting a submission in MMA. Only thing I'm going to say about that is I'd rather you do kickboxing, Raul Cadenas. I'm not going to go ahead and get into what you do in MMA. Now the main event. Catalin Morisanu goes against Maurice Jackson. Catalin Morisanu, the fight starts. He goes out there, jab, jab, overhand. Maurice Jackson goes down. They don't do a count. They just kind of stare at Maurice Jackson. The ref just watches him lay there for about 1-2 minutes, three, you know, waiting for him to kind of get back up and fight again or whatever. They don't call it down because a strike took him down, whether you thought it was legit or not. So Morisanu's just over there complaining about what's happening because he's like, I didn't hit him, you know, like he should be fine. He shouldn't be on the ground. They finally wait until Maurice Jackson gets up. Maurice Jackson's then holding the back of his head, complaining, that kind of stuff, whatever. They restart the fight. Maurice Jackson does a couple of weird karate kicks. He drops his head, turns away again, while Kailin Morisano throws some shots. The shots kind of hit on his shoulder, and he just kind of stays there in the corner, and he just sits there again. And some of the crowd were cheering when the first overhand, but afterwards they're starting to realize, all right, this just looks stupid now. So Morisano's playing to the crowd, like, what's going on? This is trash. Why is this guy fighting? What's happening? What did I pay for? That kind of deal, whatever. And then finally, Maurice Jackson gets up again. I think they restart the fight one more time. This time when he falls down, which makes it even worse. One of the better refs in the world, the thicker guy for Super Combat. He usually does a pretty good job. But even he gets mad and like takes off his gloves and like throws them at Morisano. Somebody in the corner like threw a towel, or excuse me, throws them at Jackson. Somebody in the corner threw it at Jackson. Morisano's like, you know, just thought this guy was going to fight. Can't believe that's going on. Yada, yada, yada. No. Not one person listening to this broadcast should feel sorry for Kailin Morisano at all. Maurice Jackson is who we thought he was. He is not some guy who did this out of, you know, all of a sudden. This is not no new behavior for him. Maurice Jackson's a guy who had some 31-0 record against, and I'm a guy who follows kickboxing all the time. And when I didn't know who you fought, I knew that there was something suspect about that record. Turns out they're mostly in waist-high karate kind of tournaments. He gets into glory. He fights Xavier Vinny. Right away, he starts turning. As soon as Vinny starts throwing shots at him, he plays with a couple kicks, walks himself into the corner, turns away when shots are coming. He takes two low kicks, and that is the fight. Even before that, some of the fighters were saying he had asked about going out drinking and going to a strip club maybe. Like, this is just kind of – I asked around about him when he was down in that card in San Diego. And people were like, hey, just his conduct in general was a little strange. So when I saw that Maurice Jackson was chosen, and by the way, this needs to be noted, I know DeMario Dennis well, and last month DeMario Dennis sent me this message saying, hey, they want me to go out and fight Kailin Morisano, and you know, I'm an option for him. I was like, awesome, you're going to bring an awesome fight out there, like that you're a great, you're going to accomplish your dream of being an international kickboxer, take this opportunity. He contacts me back and says, no, they're not going with me, they decided to go with Zabit Samedov. And then they didn't go with Zabit Samedov. And then all of a sudden you hear Maurice Jackson is the guy who's been announced to fight Kailin Morisano. And I'm like, the same guy that kind of turned his head away, that Maurice Jackson? That guy goes out there to compete. That guy goes out there and competes the way that he did in America, didn't really have the effort, and turns away. And then they get mad at him. And then, after it was over, people are going upset. Like, people are like, hey, man, the fans should get their name back. And Maurice Jackson's, all these, you know, name call and that kind of stuff, whatever. I don't feel sorry for Kailin Morisano and his people at all. They had other options. They could have used DeMario Dennis, who would have gave him a great fight. They chose the easiest of those options, a guy who turns his head. They knew who they were choosing. And Jackson went out there and did it. And pretty much they feel like they were jobbed over. He was fired. I don't know if he's going to get paid. Maybe he just gets to enjoy his trip, you know, to Turin. And afterwards, I'm seeing all these posts of people saying, look at this sissy, look at this guy for not fighting, look at this punk. I don't feel sorry for them at all. Kailin Morisano, you had better options to fight, and you turned them down, and you went with Maurice Jackson. And I respect more than anything. And again, you know, I'll go ahead and turn this away from Kailin Morisano, because there's a chance that he might have been just fighting who we fought. Apologies to people who are fans of Kailin Morisano. I'm going to go ahead and say maybe he didn't know who they were bringing in to fight. He was just looking to fight somebody. But Imramia, the promoter of Super Combat, said this was my fault. He took responsibility for it. Said I was the one who brought this guy out here and so on. Hand clap for that. For you saying, you know what? I went this route. I decided to bring in a certain guy. I turned down other guys to bring in this guy. Jackson, the last thing I heard from him is he said something to the effect of It was all done. It was all shady the moment that I got out there. And that's probably why part of the reason why I didn't want to fight. I'd like to have a rematch with Morisano. Who knows? Who knows what he's going on? But that was the last thing I heard from him. And so it's only fair that I bring that up. But man, I'm just saying, like when this was first announced, no part of me was like, oh man, I feel horrible for what's going on in Super Combat. No. Maurice Jackson is not the options that I heard that you guys could have brought in. You decided to go that route. I think Kailin Morisano, you've been fighting long enough to go against pretty much anybody in the world. So you bring in DeMario Dennis would have been awesome for your kickboxing name and your kickboxing brand. Like, that would have been a fun fight. You've been stopped before, but you've gone against tougher guys. You should never fight a Maurice Jackson. Maurice Jackson, he's not even fighting the best guys in the States, let alone the best guys in Europe. You owe yourself better than that, Catalin Molisano. Go out there, start going against the competition that you once went against when you were trying to be a regular on the K1 market. You can't be going against Maurice Jackson's. Gonna go ahead and wrap this fight. Show up with, I'll do two cards. One, these fights haven't emerged yet, but the 30th anniversary are the Ground Zero Tokyo 2015 card for shootboxing. Just kind of went down. Going to go ahead and talk about a couple notables because the videos didn't emerge. But I do want to bring up some because some of it is, I really want to see the fights. Andy Sauer gets a victory over Kiniyoshi Hironaka. Andy Sauer, of course, is the big star. He's the biggest international star that they've had. He's the multiple times champion for the brand. Always happy to see that he's fighting in Japan and getting victories. Continuing to build his star power in the brand is Zogari. Zogari, of course, we talked about his run last year. He gets a victory over Suzuki Hiroki. Suzuki Hiroki, this guy's been a mainstay for them, a regular shootboxer who's fought K1 sometimes, but mostly he's a shootboxer through and through. That's a big win for Zakaria. I'm really excited for him. Hope more victories come for him down the road. Hiroki Shishida was also on this card, but he lost to Kimisaki Hirohito, and I was a little surprised by that because Hiroki Shishida is even more of a name than Hiroki Suzuki. Like, he's a much more notable guy. And the Hiroki fight, of course, he's coming off the tournament win. Zakaria, again, that fight, for those who, I've mentioned it before, and I'm sorry, I'm going to go ahead and back it up, because I didn't see it, I can't give it its due, but that is a rematch from when Zakaria pretty much beat Suzuki, in the first three rounds easy, and then they went to an extra, and then he was, he took a down in the extra, and they went ahead and gave the fight to Suzuki. This was a rematch of that, and it was a one-sided, revenge for Zakaria. So I'm very, very happy that Zagari got this victory, and Suzuki was game enough to give him the rematch, and I think that it pushes his brand more, because Zakaria is a very, very talented kickboxer, very fun to watch, all action. So I'm glad that he was able to get the rematch in this battle here. A couple other fights on the card. I think just one other big-time notable for me. I want to see it. Takahashi Ai gets a victory over Mizuki Inoue. Mizuki Inoue stays active despite the fact that she's not, she fights in Invicta. She's an MMA fighter and so on. Her kickboxing is basically boxing. So sometimes people can get a hold of her and get her with kicks. Here and there, get her in the clinch and try to look for the throws and dumps. She loses a split decision. I definitely want to see that because I'm a big Mizuki Inoue fan. The only problem, Mizuki's got every tool. She just doesn't hit hard because she's so small. But other than that, I'm definitely curious to see what comes from that card. And then I'll go ahead and throw a couple of Venom Victory World Series fights. The most notable one, I want to talk about a couple of notable ones. Adoraman Kalabali gets a victory over Freddie Camayo. Kamayo is a veteran, he keeps doing it, but man, Kalabali, he's won some tough fights, and he's been in some tough fights, so I'm always a fan of his. One of those fights in particular was his victory over, but a close fight that he had with, I won't say close, a competitive fight that he had, and he lost to Nathan Corbett, so I was glad that he got that opportunity. That's a big win for him, Kalabali, and that's a first-round stoppage, so shout-out to him. Anissa Mexen, of course, I love my women's fights. I mentioned one on the last card. I'm going to mention one here. She gets a victory over Maria Salem Lobo. I'm always a fan of Anissa Mexen. Very, very skilled, mean left hook. She's as talented as they come. Always want to see her compete down the road. The Mehdi Zatoit gets a victory over Yetkin Askul. People say this fight was all action, so I'm definitely can't wait for this one to emerge. I think it may have been sent to me. I just haven't gotten around to seeing it yet, so I'm excited about that one. Mustafa Haida gets a victory over Mikhail Kamar. And Mustafa Haida, if you're wondering, he's got a victory once upon a time over Andy Sauer. He's got a loss in glory to Jordan Watson. So he's a good guy to watch. I'm glad that he was able to win. They had a tournament at 72.5 kgs. That's about 160 pounds. He was able to get the victory there. Last fight I'm going to talk about is the WEKO Pro World title at 75 kgs. Chingiz Alazov beats Zijan Kalabali. Alazov, I just don't get it. I don't know why he's not fighting for a K-1. I don't know why he's not fighting for a Glory. He's the goods. He's an awesome. He's one of the best fighters not signed in the world. You got to get this guy in the card. He's very, very special. So going to go ahead and wrap it up there. There were some events. The Best of Siam videos were merged. I wasn't able to get to them. I'll probably try to pop them in, maybe get them on the next show. But I'm not 100% certain because I really wanted that show to be kind of a year in review show. There was some stadium stuff that went around. Sprinter wasn't a good one. But I'm really leaning towards my next show being a year-in-review type show. So please forgive me if I skip over some of these cards. I do my best to get them out there, but I got to, you know, cut where I can. Thank you very much for listening. I'm excited that to talk about kickboxing and Muay Thai, as always. Thanks for listening. God bless everybody. And like I said, it's a tough world out there. Violent stuff happening all the time. Kickboxing community, Muay Thai community, loving one another, loving your neighbors. Everybody be good, and God bless. Peace.